State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for back on Tuesday, Tacky Talk. Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, good to see you on a beautiful tacky Tuesday.
Yeah, this weather is just superb. We got the nice warm days, the cool nights. I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's been over 28 days since we had any rain, according to last night's news forecast, and it looks like it's going to be like this for a few more days. My grass is having a challenge for the first time this year.
I know that's the bad part of it, unfortunately, but we get to do all kinds of outdoor stuff before the cold weather hits, so it's good.
It is, and I'd like to just kind of remind folks that Triple E is still out there. I actually saw Quincy Public Health pickup truck again down my area this week, and it's only Tuesday, so they've already been down here again. Obviously, the near marshland, and there's a lot of still water with various ponds around the city. We all know where they all are, and just be careful. That's all. Just be careful. It's still a danger, even though the weather's getting cooler until we get to much, much colder, that mosquitoes will go away. But even though it's been very, very dry, doesn't mean that still water cannot sit around. And of course, the marshlands do basically retain a lot of water. That's part of what they do. So, still water good for mosquito eggs, so to speak. So just remind people of that. And then we are reaching cold and flu season, obviously, and vaccination and opportunities available for folks for any number of things, range from COVID to the what do you call it, pneumococcal pneumonia.
Yep, that's one of them. RSV is another one. So yeah.
Well, RSV is available, obviously the flu shots available, so you don't have to take them all at once. Your insurance is likely to cover most likely all of them, and the opportunities available basically anywhere there's a pharmacy. You can get a shot, or you're not comfortable with that, call your healthcare provider. I'm fairly confident you can arrange a day to get a vaccination. So it is mid-September. Vaccinations do have an expiration on many of them. But it's up to you about your when it's a good time to do it for yourself and get the maximum protection time.
The weather was really nice for all the outdoor stuff that happened in Quincy last weekend.
Yeah, I was out Saturday. The morning seemed a little cloudy. I did have a good time with the Lieutenant Governor over at IBEW Local 103 for the United Way Cornhole Contest. And the cornhole tossers are very competitive people, as I've discovered regarding their perfect technique on throwing beanbags through the air into a hole. I was like, oh, these guys are really playing for money. But it's great to see the Lieutenant Governor, as well as the newly elected Norfolk County Clerk of Courts, Walter Timothy, as well as Councillor Greg Shanahan and Mayor Koch.
Did you yourself try your hand at cornhole,
No, I try not to embarrass myself more than I have to.
Tacky? Oh, come on.
I can embarrass myself on my own, much less with not needing a top beanbag toss. I'm sorry, Councillor Greg Shanahan from Weymouth. We did not pick up a new Quincy councillor. Greg from Weymouth. But the but no, I, Joe, I can embarrass myself in so many other ways, largely involuntarily, I suspect, without actually having to put myself in an area where I will most definitely embarrass myself.
I bet you'll see it as an Olympic event one year.
We were joking about that, actually. That was a conversation we actually did have at the corner of various folks. I saw some friends there. The Lieutenant Governor is actually a very good arm. She did a great job doing her toss. But I was talking to a few folks there. We were joking about it, but we were already half joking about it when we realized breakdancing is an Olympic sport. And a higher degree in Australia, you can get breakdancing. So while it was half a joke, part of it was like, maybe this isn't a joke. I used to make fun of curling at one time. That was a long time ago when curling made an appearance. Then it was like skateboarding. I was like, okay, I can see it. There's a very high skill set, like snowboarding. I mean, there's a specific skill set, and there's technicals. So you can kind of see how that works regarding the technique issues. But when it's very free flowing, freestyling, like break dancing, I'm like, I get it, but I'm kind of like, really?
Yeah, well, it's also an artistic expression, so it's kind of left to one's own judgment.
Well, I mean, we already saw the controversy in the Olympics regarding the gymnastics
Yes.
call, because there's a degree of judgment call there, even though there is a quote unquote technical performance, in the sense that you expect to have the body and everything in perfect perfect form. Same
Right.
with swimming is, well, diving more accurately. Diving is about perfect form. And they don't get replay. It's whatever they see that moment. They have to see if you technically meet it perfectly. But again, it's also a judgment call. So a lot of these sports people have a legit human component on judgment. And if there's a bias or not, I don't know. But during the Cold War, we watched the Olympics, there was 100% bias on all sides. We're going to be polite about this.
Yes, exactly. We'll be equitable about the bias.
Yeah, very much so. It isn't like other sports where you have like shooting. You hit the target, you clearly hit the target. The
Oh,
target's
right. That's kind of black and white. Yeah.
very clear, right? Same thing of other points-based sports. You scored a point, you don't score a point, but you can argue whether a foul is a legit foul, but it isn't done at a judge's table, it's done by referees.
Right. Yeah.
So, but certain sports like synchronized swimming, I believe, have been removed. And equestrian horse jumping, I believe, is being removed too. The change for what's coming in? There's another sport. We can't think of it right now, but it'll come to be later. There's more sports coming through similar to breakdancing.
Interesting. Okay. And you had Chowderfest too, right?
Yeah, Chowderfest was beautiful. Actually, it was beautiful, Chowderfest, right on the water, right in the old Hurley Boat Rental, which is next to the Quincy Yacht Club. Well, again, packed event. Had a great time serving some chowder, because it's a great way to meet people, to be honest with you. So did that about for 2.5 hours, got chowder all over me. Had a great Quincy High School student, Kira, who was very good at her job. It was actually a fun time. So I also forgot that lifting barrels of chowder to refill is actually pretty heavy. So like, well, I forgot, this is pretty heavy stuff I gotta lift. So
Do you remember who won by chance?
no, I didn't stay to the very end. I left
Okay.
around 5-ish to go home, and no joke, folks, to come home and make dinner. I can't eat the chowder. I have all kinds of food allergies, as you may be aware of. So I paid to come in and not eat, but also to work. Yeah, so that's what happened.
A great community event. Yeah, people love it. Yeah.
It's a regional event. People come from all over for a chowder sample. Yeah, it's a great fundraiser for the community there, and the Housenet Community Council and Dave DeBona and all the people that are volunteers do a great job. And Quincy Police was out with the Maritime Unit getting boat rides. They had a band, they had the Boy Scouts selling hot dogs and soft drinks. So, it was a good day.
Yeah.
It'll be next year again, around the same time period as now. And people mark your calendars to plan for a Saturday at some point in the first couple of weeks of sometime in the first couple of weeks of September. And I really encourage people to come to go to it.
Yeah, I think they do the Chili Fest too in the early part of the year, don't they?
Chili Fest is sometime generally in January or February in
Yeah.
the basement of the Housenet Congregational Church. It does move around a little bit. The reason I remember this is it involves my nomination papers.
Okay. Well, whatever works.
Well, I remember in COVID 2020, we had Chili Fest before after nomination papers came out. So the timing was perfect. I picked up a whole ton of signatures, in a day. And it was like thankfully did, because of 60 good signatures in one spot. So yeah, this is how my calendar works. You're always logging around the election calendar, the legislative calendar, and all the local events. That's how it works now. It's about holidays, because holidays don't work for many elected officials, other than, well, maybe Christmas and New Year's, but it depends where you're from. Like, we have a very busy July 4th. Other folks do not. Other folks have a very busy Christmas week. I do not. Ours is Thanksgiving weekend. So, in elected life, everyone in the state has different communities with different holiday schedules too. So some are extremely busy when I'm not, and vice versa. So, I live around the the schedule that's set by the legislature. It's generally
Hmm.
the, the rule under the rules. We also have the speaker's calendar, because the speaker sets the schedule. Plus, you have the hearing calendar, which is, as a chair, I set the hearing calendar, and then for my committee. And then you have obviously the seasonal calendar and the state and federal holidays, and we have the election calendar. So my life really revolves around those dates.
Yeah. As we're speaking today, I know the governor's on the front steps of the state house announcing what the state's going to do to celebrate the country's 250th anniversary in 2026.
Yeah, Battle of Lexington has is oh, now you're gonna have me do dates, Joe. The establishment of the country varies depending who you want to talk to. If you're talking to the folks in Lexington, Concord, everything starts there, right?
Right.
Revolution. So we're just gonna say that. We're just gonna go with that. Yeah, this decade is actually a very very busy decade for Massachusetts. Obviously, Plymouth Landing on 1620 got waylaid in 2020 because of COVID. City of Quincy celebrating its 400th year of establishment in 2025. 2026, we're celebrating the Declaration of Independence. 2030, we celebrate the official establishment of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts by the British in 2030. Many older communities that are established around here will be celebrating the 400th anniversary throughout this decade and into the next. It's actually quite a big milestone for not just the celebration of the establishment of the United States, but also the establishment of the original settlers in Massachusetts.
Yeah, which of course predates the Constitution, right? Yeah.
Well, that's why the Quincy flag has more than one date on it.
That's right. Yeah. And people always ask me that. That's exactly right.
Yeah, the different days of recognizing the establishment, incorporation to a town, and incorporation to a city. So,
Right. Yeah, it was a settlement first, and right, then a town, and then a city. Yeah.
one of the oldest forms of government in America is town meeting.
That's right. And we still have it here in Massachusetts, and parts of New England too, the open town meeting, which is always interesting.
It is the most free-flowing legislative body in the world. How's that sound?
Perfect. It's the best way to describe it.
And no two are the same, which I've also discovered in my years in doing this. No two town meetings are the same. So yeah, no, it's a lot going on, plenty to celebrate, and obviously the opportunity to make some tourism money as part of the governor's bigger proposal to celebrate is to get people to come visit. This is a huge tourist destination. We always take it for granted, but people around the world always will come here. And I have a friend who was on vacation in Vienna, and the English tour guide actually had visited Boston, and she told him that Boston is one of the easier walking cities for tourists, and it's a city that's still very European.
No, it's very international, certainly. You can meet people in London that certainly have toured Boston.
Yeah, and that's part of it too. So we kind of take it for granted here, but we always not realize how important it is as an international city, on not just education, healthcare, but people visiting historical sites and enjoying things that we take for granted. Again, I always say it a lot. I've said it a lot already here. Take for granted, but I mean lobster, steamer, that's purely New England. Changing season, leaf peeping, good maple syrup, and not that artificial crappy syrup.
That's right. Yes, that masquerades as maple syrup.
It's a very New England thing.
Anything going on at the State House these days besides that?
It's been quiet.
Hmm.
The various committees have moved over to written testimony hearings for late file bills. So we're getting emails like one bill, two bills that have been filed late. So all the committees, including myself, are still processing testimony from folks coming in. I'm still getting meeting requests. For example, I'm trying to arrange a meeting with an energy company regarding electric car charging stations. They're interested in expanded networks. So they want to talk to someone. So I'm like, fine, it's okay, we'll figure this out. So yeah, but I mean, As I said last couple of times, that I don't expect a whole lot of major activity over the course of the next 4 or so weeks. I mean, it may pick up towards the end of October. Definitely after Thanksgiving, we'll get through the what I call the crunch. We'll try to get through 200 bills of local home petitions and other non-controversial matters in like 4 weeks in December. But we have a bad habit of doing that before we close out the formal sessions. Elections are on people's minds. The Speaker's office, through his PAC, because the Speaker's office can't do it himself, he has a PAC that does this, that coordinates the House campaign. So the various state reps that have races that have need, they help coordinate resources around the state for that too. So, but that's out there, and some other stuff's happening. Majority Leader Mike Moran was in Kentucky this year to accept the transfer of the NCSL conference, National Conference State Legislator conference, to be held in Boston in August. Senator President Spilker and him were there representing the state on official transfer and acceptance. So we are officially now going to have the National Conference State Legislators National Conference August 3rd to 5th in 2025.
Oh, at the convention center?
It'll be at this convention, the first time we've held it since 2017. We've done, this is our third conference we're going to host, and each conference has been record attendance in terms of attendees. So Boston is a very desirable place, as I just talked about earlier, about all the unique things going on in England, in Boston, in Massachusetts. But it's not lost on an even domestic level, where other states prioritize actually coming to visit us.
Interesting. Okay. Do you need tickets for that, Sankey?
It is good question. The answer is yes, but
Okay.
it's a little weird because since each state contributes to the National Conference State Legislators, obviously legislators, staff and legislators do not have to pay tickets.
Right. Yeah.
It is a working conference because they bring experts and other legislators around the country, including our own, to do presentations to other legislators and staff and policymakers about different topics around affecting them around the country. It's a big international city, so there's all the consul generals and various embassies. Even if it's not in Massachusetts, will fly up and do their own host and presentation regarding tourism, economic development themselves. We're talking about a potential 2,000 to 2,700 legislators plus their families. But we're talking, there's about 2,700-ish legislators around the country, so we're talking about a big thing. And then you have the individual subdivided caucuses, whether it be energy caucus or healthcare caucus, but also things like the Asian caucus and the Black caucus and Latino caucus and so forth and so forth. So, it's you got all those different caucus events going off as well. So it's a huge coordinated event, and obviously not just hotels are going to be booked, but in the geographic area, everyone's trying to have to figure out how they're going to host entertainment, right? You want people to have a good time. So, obviously, I chair the House Asian Caucus, so I'm in charge of trying to figure out next year. I got about 11-ish, less, actually, yeah, just what, 11 plus, no, less than 11 months now to start to figure this out. And I would need to have a conversation with the National Caucus Chair sometime in October, November, to get like, hey, what do you want? And then I can work my way backwards and trying to figure out how to make it.
Is that so? Is that something the public can attend, or no?
The parties are by invite. The public can attend. I don't know why the public would want to attend. To be,
Okay.
it's all conferences of basically that, unless you have an interest in some like project in like Georgia that they're going to come talk about
Right. Yeah.
how it works, then I don't see why I would. Do people really want to go? I'm sure there's a way to get tickets. I know there's a way to get tickets because the website will sell tickets.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm not discouraging. It's not cheap. It's several hundred dollars.
Oh, okay.
That's the kicker. So we will see, and I hope we get some good news coverage out of it. Last 2017, we didn't get a ton of news coverage. It'd be nice to see some local and national news coverage about. Us for we do and talking to other legislators around the country.
Right.
You want to, I don't know if you want to go, Joe. You guys want to go to Food Trip in August?
Yes.
Come up to Southie to the Adventure Center. That's your field trip.
Absolutely. Hopefully the red line will be fixed by then. I can just get on the train.
It puts pressure on the MBTA to get all those lines done inside the inner city ring. We're closing in another less than 10 days or so for the red line to finally, hopefully, cross my fingers, and probably will die if it doesn't work. To be all set. I do see the buses. I do understand the inconvenience out there to the public, but hopefully that this will be settled.
Yeah, we've made all kinds of promises from the MBTA that it is going to happen. So, and I see them working around the clock because I come in here at 4:30 in the morning and they're out there. So.
Obviously I'd travel a little less because this time of year it's not as much activity. As you all know, I'm a homebody anyway. But in Wollaston, very clear they're nonstop construction. I did listen to your podcast of the MBTA, Joe, which everyone should listen to, that went to great details about the project, the complexity of it, and how they're actually pacing the work in the 24-hour level while making sure they meet OSHA requirements and safety requirements.
Yes, I've got another interview with the actual GM in October, so I'll look forward to that as well.
Yeah, you can't. This isn't the days where you can pay people overtime and make them do 12-hour shifts.
Right.
So those days are, gone. That was a thing at one point. People tend to forget. I mean, they'll pay you actually working 10, 12, 14-hour shifts for some, young guy or, well, mostly men at the time, but young men back then, many, many decades ago, we just pay them more money and then you can, just work here to long hours. Now they have shifts, they have the inspections, and it's a whole safety issue now.
Yes.
You need more bodies than you ever did.
So we are speaking on the eve of the next Fed meeting tomorrow, and there's a big anticipation of a rate cut this time.
Yeah, the talk is whether or not it's going to be a quarter point or a half a point.
Right.
So 0.25, 0.5% rate cut. What does this mean in real life? Well, currently the Fed short-term borrowing rate is between 5.25 and 5.5%, which means that the U.S. Treasury short-term T-bills between 1 month and 1 year at the auctions to the public, range between that 5.25 and 5.5%. The long yield is a little bit different because that's more market forces or people taking loans out in the competitive marketplace. So why is that important? Because believe it or not, banks borrow money from somewhere to issue loans when they get paid back, and it's not always just your deposits. So the Federal Reserve Bank is the bank for the banks, to make it pretty simple. So when the Federal Reserve loans money to those banks, they're at the higher interest rate, which then makes it more expensive to borrow money. And that includes credit card companies because credit card companies are backed by banks. Now, Visa and MasterCard are not banks, they're just transaction companies. Well, American Express and Discover actually are banks and transaction companies, meaning they do the transaction, electronic transactions as well. So people kind of can confuse the two, that Visa and MasterCard are banks. They're not. They're just the intermediary between you and the bank on your credit card
Yep,
transactions.
they're the middleman, basically.
Yep, that's who collects the fees in the middle. So in your real life terms, you're going to see mortgage rates and credit card overpaid overtime rates level out a little bit. It'll probably go down a little bit, but it's going to go down dramatically. Like, you're going to see like a 10% shift in 1 day in your credit card APR. Probably not. Will you see it shift like 1 or 2%? You probably will. And to some folks, that could be a real big di difference between 22% or 25% versus, 18 and 19%. Remember the days of 12% APR on the late payment on your credit cards? So, it'll be the start of it. And the market, stock market is going to react, trying to anticipate whether or not smaller companies can actually have more credit line of credit and borrowing as a result of the lower interest rate. So how everybody responds to this probably will be somewhat immediate in terms of the stock market, but in terms of our day-to-day lives, you probably won't feel it for some time. It's kind of slowly, how do you put this? It's slowly integrated into our society. So even though it flips in 1 day, like literally, in a moment's notice, the rate changes. As in our day-to-day lives, it takes some time to kind of make its appearance and how it affects us. So, if the economy slows more, the Federal Reserve will definitely have to lower interest rates. And The unemployment number last time was actually fairly strong. So it was 4.2% national unemployment rate from 4.3%. So it went down a little bit. Job creation was very slow. And we're closing in quickly on one-on-one, meaning for every person unemployed, there's one job available, which means we're heading towards pro-employer marketplace, meaning employers will be able to dictate salary soon. And if it dips below where you have less than one job for one person, the employers definitely have the leverage on the negotiation table for wages. So, not surprising if your collective bargaining situation, this is the moment. You gotta get your negotiations now for the best price possible. And you see that at the Boeing strike at the moment. The union employees of Boeing are striking to get a better long-term contract and wages and benefits. And this is the moment.
Yep, I think the UAW is striking against one of the manufacturers as well, Stellantis, which makes Chrysler products, I think.
Yes, yeah, the old Chrysler Stellantis. But if you don't do this now, and becomes more of an pro-employer wage market because there's just the job ratio shifts against the unemployed people, then you start to lose your leverage. So as contracts have been coming up this year at a national level, for whether it be actually even if you're not a union employee and you're on a contract and expiring soon, you better leverage the best dollar you can now. Before the talent pool shifts again, as a result of higher unemployment, employer has more to pick from.
Yeah, they're going to want to lock it in for as long as possible. Nurses at Faulkner Hospital are contemplating strike now, so it's you, as you say, do or die right now.
It is most definitely is. This is not lost on union leadership. They are perfectly aware regarding the shift in the marketplace regarding unemployment, and it impacts employers and employees, and it does affect their wages. And wage growth is an inflationary driver. And as I know it sounds awful, but as unemployment goes up, or more accurately, job openings go down, becomes more pro-employer, and then the wages will shift down because the employers will now have leverage again.
Right. I'd be curious to see how a rate cut's going to impact the presidential election.
I think it depends on eye of the beholder, right? I mean, I was talking about this to some folks this weekend, and my personal opinion is that if you're voting for either candidate, you're locked in. Okay, you're not inclined to change your mind. Will you change your mind? Sure, you could change your mind, but I think the polling, and I think people have really have set their sights on, for whatever personal reasons, and that's up to you, not me, to vote a very specific individual, they will. Now, could they change the vote? Most definitely they could. Do I expect a mass change? Absolutely not. Do I expect a massive shift of 10% of voters on either candidate moving to the other side? Most definitely not. Could I see fractional changes? Absolutely, right? Very small fractional changes. And then you have this whole question about, who's going to not vote? Like, just leave the vote blank. You don't have to vote for the candidate. You can leave it blank. And then it becomes this really minuscule sect of undivided voters, I'm sorry, undecided voters, this very small section of undecided voters that's going to make the final call in the end. And we don't know what they look like. And that's kind of the hardest part. People tend to, pollsters and political science folks and commentators and media folks all seem to have some knowledge of this undecided base. And to be honest with you folks, no one knows what they really look like.
That's
Right?
true. That's true. They can say they do, and they can sell data that says they do, but they don't for sure.
No, take it from a guy that does election observations his whole life, observing elections my whole adult life. And actually, I started doing this in college, observing elections. And it is very unpredictable. It doesn't matter what decade you're in. Undecided voters are unpredictable, and they're not what you think they look like. People always assume they represent a certain demographic of gender, race, religion, socioeconomics, where they live. It's not. Undecided voters isn't this kind of like template individual. They're not. They're like you and me. They're just ordinary folks who have not made a decision yet. And it can be any personal thoughts about politics or life or whatever, and they're just another folk. The battleground states was what they focus on. And those undecided voters are a real question mark. So I suspect there'll be a lot more polling data and whatnot going out there. I am curious though. I heard that Taylor Swift's announcement had created bump across numbers of new registered voters. Let's see if I can look up quickly here.
Yeah, not surprising, given her fan base, and the demographic as well. Younger females, I think, probably is the bulk of her audience. And I know she put out, voter registration information as part of that endorsement. So that was the goal, obviously.
Yeah, and we'll see if she does positive reinforcement as we get closer to election day to get people to the polls and put out information out there. The internet now provides portals for people to figure out, where they're going to vote, how they're going to vote, and what days to vote, and when things start. So I do not know. I do not, I'm not privy to anything she does. But I mean, it'd be interesting to see if she drives up the vote through social media. Let's see here. Let's see how many. Let's just look quickly on my phone here. See if they have a number thus far. Let's see here.
She has something like 300 million followers. So, I mean, even a half a percent of that is significant.
Yeah, it's curious. If 337, 300, 6 days ago, 337,000 people clicked on the register vote site on Taylor Swift
Wow.
6 days ago, according to NBC News.
Okay.
So yeah, unlike other celebrities, I can't think of a celebrity with this just power to get folks to visit a website and register to vote.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it'll move the needle for sure. There's no question. It has to.
Oh yes, I mean, one of the big things about politics is that you gotta keep up with the times, and I am aging people, so I do have challenges keeping up with the times.
That's why you have a young staff, Tacky.
They teach me what the times are.
That's right.
Let's be honest about it. You only know the time period we all grow up in, and that's what we know. But I don't know what it's like to be someone younger than me, in particular, as now I've become that person I used to make fun of, as I like to say. And Taylor Swift is definitely a phenom that has incredible power to move people to do something as simple to register to vote. Can't make it any simpler.
Here in Massachusetts, of course, there will also be five ballot questions. The Secretary of State has finally finalized those, and I still haven't got my red booklet yet. I'm waiting for that.
Really,
Oh.
it should have arrived already. Obviously, you can go to the Secretary of State's website,
Yes.
www.mass.gov/sec, and they'll get you to the Secretary's website. Click Elections Division, and you get your little red book. I'm not sure how this would go. I saw the Office of Campaign Political Finance newsletter, which is something you should sign up for because it's actually great. And the ballot question spending is not as intense as I thought it would be.
I agree. I was expecting more too, especially for the tipped workers one and maybe the transportation network drivers question.
Yeah. The latter one, the tip workers was the I'm sorry, the yeah, the Uber driver unionization pay scale was the one I expected a whole lot of money to go into. I've not seen that materialize in the campaign finance reports. Oh, for folks who are unaware what we're talking about, when you do a ballot question, the Office of Campaign Political Finance requires a campaign that you spend money on a campaign to for a ballot question to form a PAC, Perform Political Action Committee. It's a ballot initiative political action committee. So the money goes in there that can be spent on advertising and promoting and signature gathering for a ballot question. You don't actually have to have the ballot question certified. You can do it before as part of paying people to collect signatures or promoting signature gathering. So various interest groups can put money into those PACs, and then they proceed to use that money to promote their campaign. And we've seen this goes into the tens of millions of dollars, depending what year it is, on ballot questions. So given the five of them out there on psychedelics, which leave it at that, which I'm still very confused how that ballot question works. Question about minimum wage for restaurant service workers. Question about Uber drivers, unionization, standardization of pay, it's actually not as simple as unionization. It's really kind of simple for a uniform pay structure for them. You have the so-called auditing the legislature by the state auditor, and then you have
The MCAS requirement.
taking not having MCAS as a requirement for a high school diploma. But those are the five ballot questions. And
Right.
personally, I expected the big industry ones, such as the minimum wage for service workers in the restaurant industry, as well as the Uber ones, to be the highest ballot question PACs, because the industries have the most money, would pump it in there. The next one down the line would be the MCAS one with the teachers union pumping a lot of money in there. And then that's kind of the sequence I would think. Psychedelics was actually the low end of my expectation of spending. But obviously, I gravitate towards the big companies when it comes to ballot question initiatives, because the big companies have money.
Yeah, right. I think the maybe that the Uber driver one had the wind taken out of its sails a little bit with the state law that set the minimum wage for them.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit that was a settlement of Attorney General Campbell some months back that Uber is doing a victory round in its advertising not long afterwards, saying that they've set a highest national rate of basically some type of minimum wage for Uber drivers. So the ballot question is a little convoluted because they want to make Uber drivers independent contractors, but full employee benefits.
Right.
And you cannot be self-employed and receive food benefits. That's not how self-employment works.
Well, right. Who's going to pay for that? Right. Yeah.
For that. So it's a great confusing explanation on the Uber question, because of the fact that they want to make people who want to retain the ability to be self-employed but get full-time benefits for self-employed, which at least an intriguing policy question to all forms of employment. But at the same time, though, the issue with the attorney general kind of mutes a lot of the pay issue by sending by put $35 an hour minimum pay.
I know it's really a pretty good starting salary. So, if you like to drive, this could be an option.
Well, get it while you can, because the age of robotaxi is going to be starting in San Francisco. They already have the Waymo, I believe, is the taxi out there in San Francisco, which is available for public use. San Francisco actually does have a robotaxi.
Oh.
They're being experimented on, not surprisingly, on warmer climate areas, and in cities that are mostly grids.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So we can just pre-program it. Like Florida would be a good one, I guess.
Yeah, not surprisingly, America Southwest and Southern California is where there's a lot of this going on. So the age of automated driving taxis are not that far away. We're probably 10 years out.
Wow, that's amazing.
Uber has pretty much surrendered trying to make their own electric car. They're now looking to they're looking to partner up with Mobileye. Is it Mobileye? I don't know. I can't remember who's partnering, but various companies that were doing own car industry stuff surrendered, and they're just going to look for new partners that are already ahead of the game in the car industry regarding self-driving. Apple, for example, people forgot Apple had a car. They want to do a self-driving car.
Yeah, I think Google too. Yeah.
Yeah, with Google. I think Google and Intel have sold off their
Yeah.
to subsidiary. They're basically a subsidiary company now. But yeah, Apple tried it. They sold it. They just gave up. They're like, this is too expensive. It's cost us much money, and we're behind other companies in developing the tech. So you're going to see a consolidation of self-driving car technology probably in 5 or so years, particularly of new artificial intelligence and faster, stronger supercomputer chips from NVIDIA and other companies. That's you're going to see this consolidation of the folks that were ahead of the technology game, and sufficient funding to stick it out this long, get to the top. I don't see any of the big car manufacturers creating those self-driving cars. I think you're going to just utilize other self-driving car technology.
Right. Yeah, exactly. With the question to audit the legislature, Tacky, is that tied up in the courts? Do you know, or is that been
Attorney
resolved?
General Campbell decided not to take the case.
Oh, okay.
So the state auditor had, well, the way you can sue us, well, sue the state is through the attorney general's office, and can Canada executive branch office sue the legislature? Interesting question. Attorney
Yeah.
General, we're not doing this.
Okay, yeah. So it's up. That's why it ended up a question.
That's why it's a ballot question.
Okay.
And even then, the interesting question on the force to compel. So the civics lesson, everyone. The legislative branch is not subservient to executive branch. Contrary to what presidents like to believe, because every president does a power grab against the legislature, and same thing happens in state government. Governors struggle against the legislature. The legislature legislates, the executive branch executes the legislature's instructions. That's how it works. You know, we can argue about city and town government too, which town government is a little quirky, as we talked about earlier, but you know, city government has a legislative branch. A legislative branch sets up laws and the power to veto for a reason, override vetoes, to have the executive branch do what the legislative branch is asking them, or actually asking, telling them to do when they pass a law, which is why veto overrides are a big part of American government. And we have legislative and executive branches. So the interesting constitutional question is always the same, is that we have a member of the executive branch, which is state auditor, which is duly elected from the public, trying to tell the legislative branch, exert itself in the legislative branch to do something. And that is how it works. You don't tell the legislative branch. The legislative branch can cut your pay, it can change your job description, it can change the law on you, it can rewrite laws on you, it can, unless the Constitution gives specific instructions of which that we can amend the Constitution by, you know, two sessions of legislation voted by the public. The public can change the Constitution, change the constitutional powers of any elected officer, constitutional officer in the state. But same thing at my level. I mean, we could, the district attorneys and the, it gets a little weird actually. Certain county positions are created by the state, some are created by the Constitution. I'm trying to remember which, like sheriffs, DAs, clerk of courts. I gotta look it up. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
It's been a long time. So you asked me the county questions. I shouldn't probably, I went to a water, I probably should not gone into regarding how county, what counties fit into the job description category in the Constitution. It's been too long since they looked at it. But I mean, the legislature obviously has the ability to tell executive officials what to do. We can abolish it and create executive branch offices. So my time, I've already seen many different secretariats, and I've seen agencies abolished and moved around it. Elk Grove Beverage Control Commission is one of the ones that comes to mind quickly. It's the one where Mitt Romney tried to kill the agency, and we moved it from the governor's office to Tim Kaine at the time, the state treasurer's office. We can move offices around, you know, so we can do things like that. So we can, the legislative body can, directly impact the executive body if the legislative body so choose so.
Yeah.
The governor's office can't tell us what to do. And even during COVID, we had control of the chambers, even though during the state of emergency, the Constitution prohibits the governor from ever in preventing a session of the legislature from ever happening. The governor is prohibited by Constitution. It's a little more wordy than I just said.
Yeah.
But the executive branch can't tell the legislative branch not to hold a session. And even 2020 COVID, we're trying to figure out how to make this work. You know, the governor's office could not shut down the chambers.
Right. No, it's you are the people.
Yeah, it's it, these are little nuances that I hope people appreciate when we do these conversations. It's a little bit inside baseball, a little bit overly detailed. But it kind of explains how this works. And a lot of it is, again, driven really by the Constitution and hundreds of years of precedent under the Constitution.
Actually, today is Constitution Day. Interestingly enough, the anniversary of the Constitution of the country.
Oh, it's the final ratification today.
Yes.
The last state ratified. Now we got new trivia. Which was the last state ratified as the U.S. Constitution?
I know Delaware was the first. I'm not sure about the last.
I'm not sure about the last year. I want to say it's like South Carolina.
That might be. That might be it,
But
actually.
now you got to make me look it up. I'm
No, I'm
sorry.
going to look it up. Okay. This is real-time research, folks.
U.S. Constitution, Rhode Island.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, actually, Rhode Island ratified Constitution May 29th, 1790.
Oh, okay.
Delaware did it December 7th, 1787. So I don't know why today is Constitution Day. Is it the state? Oh, here we go. The Constitution was signed by delegates on September 17th, 1787, at the Constitutional Convention, Philadelphia.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
So that means that the delegates had finalized a version for the 13 colonies to approve.
Gotcha. Okay.
So today the deal was cut among the delegates of the 13 colonies, which then shipped it back to the 13 colonies for them to ratify.
The case closed.
Well, if you were one of the persons at that delegation, you better hope you stay ratified, because it'd be pretty embarrassing that you got sent there to put together a constitution and this, awful deal-making process, as you can all guess. And
Yes.
your state said no.
Yeah, that'd be a little embarrassing.
Really a slight embarrassment. We're forming a country. I've been sent from my state to represent my state, represent my state's interests. We have to compromise to make this work with deal making, endlessly for months, and we send it back home and they say no. And thankfully no one had to endure that embarrassment, because I can imagine I can imagine the letters being sent, because I had no telephone or email. So you can imagine the letters being sent, like, what just happened? I gotta write a letter. Stamp it, put a wax on. They didn't have physical stamps back then. And you had to like get it in the post, and you had to pay the postman directly, because the postman was paid. It was not public owned post, it was private company postman. And then just imagine that, people. You read, from another letter or from somewhere that your friend screwed up in a different part of the colonies, and you gotta write a letter back saying what went wrong.
That's right. And you have to start the whole thing all over again.
Yeah, and you gotta like get your change out to pay
Yeah.
the postman as they come collect your mail, because there was no government post office.
Right.
It was all private delivery. And then get that down to the person who then, who knows how long it takes, right? And then read the letter and then have to, oh my God, I gotta respond right away. Get the ink well out, get the block ink, rub the water in the block ink, get your parchment out, get it out there, start writing. Then you got a blot, and then you got to like clean off the blot.
Yeah,
The
it was.
conveniences of these things,
I was
right?
just gonna say you couldn't just text him.
Yeah, your visceral response must be made now. And you just
That's
read
right.
the letter, like, oh, I'm so angry. I got to write back now.
That's why those letters were so passionate back then.
But you also had to pay for the post, because there was, again, no government post office. You're like, now you got to like wait for the guy to go, so how much does this get to Philadelphia?
Right.
And it was like, do we have enough money?
Come back next month when I have more money.
was listening to American Storytellers podcast, and they were telling the story of Ben Franklin. It was like a two-parter, and I didn't realize that's one of the things that Ben Franklin did. He was able to get his publications, his newspaper, by, no joke, paying a better price to the delivery service
Oh, I believe that. Yeah.
for the postman, for lack of a better term, before we had modern postmen. So there were people who were delivering mail and delivering periodicals, and they were run by a centralized company, and this company would try to be the monopoly. No surprise, right? You want to be the sole deliverer of mail and post and periodicals and anything else, right, in your community, in the region. So Ben Franklin would avoid, because they knew the person who owned the company hated him, his solution was to pay the delivery people en route.
Ah, yes, keep things moving.
Avoid the boss.
Yeah.
I don't know. Again, the man was, he made money by knowing how to spend money and knowing how to spend money properly. And he told the delivery guy, hey, times are kind of hard. And I got this extra stuff. Oh, my boss hates you. Yeah, I know your boss hates me. But, it's going to be cold soon and you could use a couple extra bucks, right?
Well, wasn't he the coined the phrase penny saved, penny earned?
Oh, a penny spent is also a penny earned.
Yeah.
That's again, we're talking about a different time that we all kind of take for granted today. But we're both old enough to remember we did send letters to people.
That's right. Yeah, that's a dying art now for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote letters. I did write letters to folks. I mean, especially during after college, we didn't have email. So people I knew that was still the right address, we sent them cards and letters, just to say hi. So it's nowadays we take for granted, as I kind of not really joked around about ancient, so-called ancient times, getting news around and how to respond viscerally to some piece of mail you got by responding right away, as opposed to text messaging viscerally or posting viscerally, because
That's
you
right.
got angry reading something. Abigail Adams and the John Adams are another classic example of letters back and forth, almost real-time responses.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, I just looked at the clock. We're like beyond our time.
Well, we spent the last 15 minutes talking about colonial history messaging.
Well, it's kind of different, something new.
Well, it's part of the conversation piece of being a future. You never know where this may go, and you can stay to the end, or you can turn me off in the middle. Whatever works for you.
But now we can call and email you. So how do we do that?
Well, you can ring us at the office, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370 is the office. We're in room 42 of the State House. Tacky, T-A-C-K-E-Y dot C-H-A-N at emilyhouse.gov. Tacky.chan at emilyhouse.gov is the State House email. You can reach us there. We do have X at Tacky Chan, as well as State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. So, for example, I visit a heat pump facility, one of the first of its kind in the nation, at Framingham yesterday, with Ukrainian officials, which we didn't get to talk about. We can save that for a different conversation. I can talk about how heat pumps work. But it was actually a fascinating tour, and there'll be pictures up of me and them some point later today from the staff, as we took a bunch of pictures and learned about heat pumps. And then we have emulegislature.gov, Mass. Emulegislature.gov is the legislative website. Very much encourage people to visit that and find stuff without having to ask me. Plenty of information for you to look. And then you have tactchat.org, which people actually do look at because we do use the contact portal there, and I do receive your messages through the contact portal. And of course, me and Joe, every week or two, depending on our scheduling, we'll continue to try to keep you informed and sometimes entertained on various and random topics of the day. And of course, check with Joe in the morning for his 10 minutes and his great interviews with different state and local officials.
Thank you so much, Jackie, as always. We'll check in again later this month.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll see you in October, actually.
Okay, sounds good.
I'll be away for a little bit. So we'll see you in about we'll see you when the leaves start to change.
That's right, it won't be long. All right, thanks very much.
Take care.